Good afternoon. This is Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell in Nome, and we have a group of people on around the state, and this is the first of what will be 8 hearings around the state on the initiative to regulate and tax production, sale, and use of marijuana. And that initiative will appear as ballot measure 2 on the November 4 general election ballot. This is the first of our hearings today. We will have one on Friday in Vero, another on Monday, a week from, for the Monday, September 15th in Juneau, Thursday, September 18th in Ketchikan, Tuesday, September 23rd in Anchorage, Thursday, September 25th in Wasilla, Monday, September 29th in Bethel, and Tuesday, September 30th in Fairbanks. All hearings will be available on teleconference, and information about the time and location of hearings can be found at the Lieutenant Governor's website, as well as the Elections Division of Elections website, is my understanding. Cameron, if you can make sure that's the case, because we did announce that at the last hearing.
They are.
And I appreciate the hospitality of the people of Nome here at City Hall for giving us a room to hold this hearing. And our agenda today is rather simple. I will present a sectional analysis and cost estimate of the bill. The proposers of the bill who are on the telephone, I believe are on the telephone, will present for 10 minutes.
Chris Rempert from the campaign to regulate marijuana.
Chris Rempert will give that, and then Christina Wolston will present the con side for 10 minutes. Then we'll open up for public testimony, and let me just say this. We tend to conduct this in the same manner as a legislative hearing, and it's very important to do that for several reasons. First off, if the voters decide this bill becomes law, then there may be questions later in the courts, in a legislative hearing to amend a law on what was the intent of the law as it's passed. And it's very important that we have a good record of what the proposers and the opponents were saying at the time. We also have several experts on from the state who can answer technical questions about how the law would be enforced, how it may affect other laws, and so forth. And it's the intent of us and the Lieutenant Governor's office, and joined here by Cameron Eggers and April Shoemaker, as well as the people from the governor's office and the state agencies, not to take a position on the law per se, but to be able to answer questions. And I will just say that this particular initiative is one that has many different facets to it, so may present many different questions. So we will keep a good hearing record, and I will also try during the course of these hearings occasionally to add to the record if we've learned something in one community that's not brought up in another. I can just say that when we went through this process on a similar complicated piece of legislation 2 years ago on coastal zone, there were questions that might come up in one community that I wanted to make sure that people in other communities had heard. And so we'll go forward with this. And there's a slideshow right now, and let me just give a summary of the proposed bill. This bill would tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana in Alaska. It would make the use of marijuana legal for persons 21 or older, allowing them to possess, use, display, purchase, or transport up to 1 ounce of marijuana. It would impose various restrictions on personal cultivation, public use, and operation of marijuana-related facilities. It would allow the legislature to create a marijuana control board in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And it imposes an excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana, and provides for the enforcement and administration of that tax. Section 1 adds a new chapter, Chapter 17.38, Regulation of Marijuana, to the Alaska statutes. And that statute would provide that production and sale of marijuana should be regulated and taxed such that businesses could sell marijuana, and that such sale could be conducted in a manner that protects consumers and promotes public health and safety. The statute would limit the use, sale, growth, and transport of marijuana to individuals who are 21 years of age or older, and impose penalties for public consumption. The statute would allow for the creation of a marijuana control board while still allowing for local government to make decisions regarding its use and regulation. Section 2 adds a new chapter, 43.61, an excise tax on marijuana to the Alaska statutes, which would impose a $50 per ounce excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana from a marijuana cultivation facility producer to a retail marijuana store distributor or marijuana product manufacturing facility. The producer would be responsible for paying the tax. Monthly tax statements would be required from the Department of Revenue from each marijuana cultivation facility. And if these taxes were not paid, the facility would be subject to civil penalties under Alaska Statute 43.05220. Lieutenant Governor, those are the major sections of the bill. There's a further summary and sectional analysis of the bill in the initial Attorney General's review of the initial of the application. There was a Section 3 that's a simple severability clause. But there's more on that. Let me explain how a citizen initiative works. A citizen initiative is one that several states have, mostly Western states. And the idea of our constitutional founders was that if people wanted to get a law through the legislature and the legislature wasn't dealing with it, an initiative is a release valve. It's a pressure relief valve that allows the public to gather signatures. In this case, it's about 30,000 signatures distributed around the state, and then go through the process of getting the bill passed. It was only recently, in 2010, the legislature added this requirement that the Lieutenant Governor hold hearings around the state. We're doing this in the manner that I mentioned before. And if this measure passes this election, the initiated law becomes effective 90 days after certification. A law like this is not subject to a governor's veto, and it may not be repealed by the legislature within 2 years of its effective date, according to the Constitution, Article 11. And although the legislature may amend an initiative at any time after it's enacted, any amendments made during the first 2 years may not operate to effectively repeal the initiative by amendment or vitiate the intent. And that's something that's been tested several times in the Supreme Court. Let me turn now from the summary of the review in this process to a cost estimate of the bill. And what we do when we get an initiative like this is we ask several different departments to provide information. A full copy of the cost estimate is on the table here in the hearing room or available on our website. But the Department of Revenue that would need to create at least three new positions to oversee the new excise tax, estimated recurring annual costs of $300,000 in collecting the tax. I will tell you, we did not estimate the size of the tax on the income side. And I will tell you that also watching Colorado, which passed a similar bill, it's pretty hard to make an estimate at this point, though people have, and you may hear that from both the proponents and the opponents. But the way we've done cost estimates traditionally in the state is that we don't work on speculative issues. Contractually, the Department of Revenue estimates it would need a one-time expense of $500,000 for configurations of their tax revenue management systems. And so they're estimated $350,000 to $500,000 there. So their first year cost was $650,000 to $800,000. The Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development noted that if the initiative passes, the responsibility for controlling marijuana will lie with the ABC board until or unless a marijuana control board is established by the legislature within DCCED. And as was done with Colorado, the department recommends the creation of a task force to identify legal policy and procedural issues that need to be resolved. From creating a database to purchasing vehicles, the estimated cost to create a task force is about $1.5 million for the first year and about $1.4 million for the second year. And so their estimate for the first year was $1.563,960 at the Department of Commerce. Other departments also weighed in. The Department of Health and Social Services estimated that the need to respond to certain health issues based on the availability of marijuana could increase their expenses as high as $2.9 million a year. And so their estimate ranges from zero to that $2.9 million a year. the Department of Public Safety, which discussed the need to, to respond with issues in law enforcement, increasing the statewide drug enforcement unit, trooper investigators, to target the diversion and exportation of marijuana lawfully grown in Alaska, requiring more troops to receive drug recognition expert certification, launching a public education and awareness campaign on the dangers of driving under the influence of marijuana, and increasing the number of samples being sent for toxicology analysis to detect the presence of marijuana in blood, estimated that this would add about $1.4 million in costs to the Department of Public Safety. The Department of Environmental Conservation, which regulates the production of foodstuffs in the state, and is otherwise the statewide health department in terms of issues, they estimated $0 to $136,900 for their efforts in regulation of food or working with additional food establishments. And the University of Alaska came back with a series of possible costs and said that their number was indeterminate. The Office of the Lieutenant Governor had a cost of $80,257, essentially for the voter information pamphlet, travel for these hearings, and work at the Division of Elections. So let me now turn to the analysis and estimate of the bill. I'm going to hold on questions if there are any questions on the on what I've said on the content of the bill until people have the chance to testify one way or the other. And first, open up to the proposers and the sponsors. And could you, for the record, state your name, Mr. Sponsor, and you have 10 minutes from 3:14 to do your presentation. We have a PowerPoint that they provided. We're going to open up the PowerPoint here as you talk, so the floor is yours.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hello. Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Tim Hinterberger. I'm a professor and a medical educator at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and I serve as volunteer chair of the Campaign to Regulate Marijuana. I will be talking to you today about ballot measure 2. Before I go on, let me just confirm that you're viewing the PowerPoint that we sent. It says ballot measure 2, known public hearing.
Yes, we are.
That's my name. Okay. I'll be checking from time to time just to make sure that we're in sync because I can't see what's being projected there. Okay. So let's go to the next slide. Introduction. Next slide. that has a number of us pictured on it. Before we get to the initiative itself, I want to take a moment to introduce you to our campaign committee. The Campaign to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol is a grassroots organization made up of hundreds of volunteers across the state, many of whom have been involved with this issue for many years. And that's me at the second from the left in the top row. Next slide. The initiative is on the ballot because over 45,000 Alaskans signed the qualifying petition. We had signature gatherers all over the state in both urban and rural Alaska, and the response was overwhelmingly positive. Alaskans from Anchorage to Nome and everywhere in between recognized that marijuana prohibition has failed. Next slide. Showing the initiative framework. So, and I guess I'm on the next slide. Okay, initiative framework. Thank you. Ballot Measure 2 offers Alaskans the opportunity to enact a more sensible approach to marijuana. We all know that marijuana is already here. We have the highest rate of use in the country with over 100,000 Alaskans currently using marijuana. So the question you'll be deciding in November is not whether marijuana should be in the state, but rather how the existing industry should be managed. Ballot Measure 2 sets up a framework, and after the initiative passes, a 9-month rulemaking period will begin. During that rulemaking period, most forms of advertising will be banned. Most forms of advertising will be banned. So-called child-friendly edibles will be banned, and other strict regulations will be enacted to ensure that the sale of marijuana is tightly controlled. Next slide, please. The initiative actually requires that these steps are taken. They are not optional. Next slide, please. Regulations will be enacted to ensure that marijuana is not sold to minors. This means strict rules, such as the banning of child-friendly edibles like gummy bears and lollipops. Next slide, please. Rulemaking. Labeling requirements will ensure quality control so consumers know what they are getting. Next slide. Strict restrictions on advertising can and will be put into place. Anyone who tells you otherwise either has not read the initiative, we're showing the section here, section 1738090, or is trying to deliberately mislead you about it. Next slide, please. Local control. Finally, the initiative provides communities with the greatest level of local control allowed by state law. It would not be constitutional for us to suggest that communities can ban the possession of marijuana because that is protected by the Alaska Supreme Court's interpretation of the state constitution. But the initiative gives Nome, Anchorage, or any other local government in Alaska the opportunity to ban the purchase and sale of marijuana. Those communities who decide to exercise their local option will have a situation fundamentally no different from what we have today, where individual possession is allowed. Next slide, please. Marijuana versus alcohol. Next slide. When considering whether marijuana should be taxed and regulated like alcohol, it is important to recognize that marijuana is safer than alcohol by any objective standard. We're looking at this quote by a 28-year Barrow resident reminding us that law enforcement officers would always rather deal with somebody who's been using marijuana rather than somebody who's been using alcohol. Next slide, please. This is showing the marijuana versus alcohol, one of the signs we had on Anchorage buses this summer. And the next slide, 14, marijuana versus alcohol. The position I hold as a scientist and a medical educator, but the fact that marijuana is safer than alcohol, both to the individual and to society, is supported by all the scientific research. Polls show that nearly 75% of Americans agree that this is true. And if we look at the next slide, marijuana versus alcohol, public opinion, this is something that the overwhelming majority of voters in this state and in the country recognize. As you can see from this slide where it says the era of reefer madness is over, which is more harmful to a person's health, somewhere between only 10 and 15% of people believe that marijuana is more harmful than alcohol, which is about the same number of people that believe in Bigfoot. Next slide, please. Initiative benefits. So in considering the benefits of passing ballot measure 2, one of the first and most obvious benefits is that legalizing marijuana could actually lead to a decrease in alcohol consumption. Next slide. Initiative benefits. Where it says reduce alcohol consumption, protect teens, revenue for the state, jobs for Alaskans, public safety, and safe access to medical marijuana. Okay, so legalizing marijuana could curb drinking and its associated social costs. So next slide, protecting teens. One of the most important benefits of taxation and regulation, counter to what you are going to hear from the opposition, is that it will make it harder for teens to access marijuana. Again, marijuana is already here in Alaska, and it is currently easier for teens to obtain alcohol or tobacco. I'm sorry, it is easier for teens to obtain alcohol or tobacco than it is for them to obtain marijuana. Anyway, so by regulating it, we will require that sales are conducted by responsible businesses who require proof of ID and have an incentive to make sure they are not selling to minors. Okay. The next slide, what we have seen out of Colorado, marijuana used by Colorado teenagers, in Colorado, which voted to tax and regulate marijuana in 2012, is that teen use has actually decreased, according to the Colorado Department of Public Health. So when you hear the opposition group tell you that teen use will increase after the initiative passes in Alaska, please know that current facts do not back up those claims. Next slide. Tax revenue. Along with reduction in alcohol consumption and teen use, we know that taxing and regulating marijuana will create new revenue for the state. Colorado and Washington expect to collect hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue over the next few years. Next slide, cost savings. Additionally, we know that the state is spending between $8 million and $14 million per year enforcing marijuana possession laws, according to the American Civil Liberties Union. Whatever it costs to implement the law and the regulatory structure will be more than covered by the money we will save no longer having to enforce the failed policies of prohibition. Next slide, jobs for Alaskans. And just as importantly, taxing and regulating marijuana will create jobs for Alaskans. Colorado's marijuana industry currently supports over 10,000 jobs. Next slide, public safety. From a public safety perspective, most Alaskans recognize that our law enforcement officials should be focusing on fighting violent crime, not arresting adults in the state simply for using a substance that is far safer than alcohol. Yet, according to former Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court, quote, the threat of state prosecution for simple marijuana is real and substantial. Next slide, public safety. The American Civil Liberties Union reports that an Alaskan is arrested for marijuana possession on average every 4.3 hours in the state. Next slide, public safety. Of all drug arrests in Alaska, 81% are for marijuana possession, which is the highest rate in the country. We are criminalizing otherwise law-abiding citizens and wasting precious law enforcement resources, which could be spent more productively. Next slide, safe medical access. Finally, passing ballot measure 2 will increase access to medical marijuana for patients who really need it, as reported here in the story by KTUU Channel 2. Medical marijuana is technically legal in Alaska, but there is no way for many patients to access their medicine safely. We hear stories every day from people who have been prescribed marijuana to treat various ailments, but have to go to the black market to obtain it. Next slide. Finishing up here. Prohibitionists. In closing, I want to issue a word of warning and caution in thinking about the arguments that will be presented by the prohibitionist group today and over the course of the coming campaign. Next slide. Prohibitionists. The history of prohibition in this country is that the forces who support it will stop at nothing to maintain the government's policy of arresting and prosecuting adults for simply using a substance which is safer than alcohol. In 1937, when marijuana was first made illegal, it was done so almost entirely due to ignorance and to racism. Lies and racism is the reason that marijuana is illegal today. The chief of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, Harry Anslinger, justified marijuana prohibition by saying things like, marijuana leads to pacifism and communist brainwashing. I know that when we show this kind of information today, people laugh at it, but it's key to remember that this is the reason that marijuana is illegal today. There is no other reason. Next slide. Harry Anslinger also said the primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effect on the degenerate races. And if you smoke a joint, you're likely to kill your brother. Next slide. The next slide that shows a photo of the current DEA chief, Michelle Leonhard, reminds us that this view has not diminished in Washington, D.C. Next slide, prohibitionists. The prohibitionist group in Alaska, from whom you will hear today, has been taken to task by the press for misleading the public over the course of this campaign already. The next slide, where it says the mudflats, is more of this response from the press over past information from our opposition. Next slide. Finally, our policies should be based on fact and science, not on fear-mongering and misinformation. It is a fact that marijuana is safer than alcohol, and it would be irrational to continue our current policies, which have needlessly criminalized thousands of Alaskans, empowered the criminal underground, left millions of potential tax revenue on the table, and avoided good-paying jobs for Alaskans, and prevented medical marijuana patients from accessing the medicine safely and without fear. I hope that you will stand with me and thousands of other Alaskans in November by voting yes on ballot measure 2. Thank you.
Dr. Hinderberger, thank you very much. I next turn the floor over to Christina Wolfson with the opposition from the Vote No on 2 Big Marijuana, Big Mistake campaign. And we're bringing up her slideshow. I don't know if the slideshow is posted on our website.
She just gave it to me. So we
just have it, but we're going to try for a record of the hearing if we receive exhibits to put them out on the hearing.
My apologies.
No problem, Christina.
Well, thank you very much. My name is Christina Wolfson. I'm the spokesperson for Big Marijuana, Big Mistake, Vote No on 2. I'm here on behalf of all of the Alaska organizations, as you see on the screen, organizations like the Alaska Chamber, the Alliance, many others, the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police, who do not believe that ballot measure 2 is in the best interest for Alaska. They believe that it will cost us, and not just from a monetary standpoint. We represent tens of thousands of Alaskans and thousands of Alaskan businesses that have our eyes wide open and have come together because we have come to understand what's in ballot measure 2, and we have some grave concerns. When you look at the fine print of what's in ballot measure 2, and one of the things that I would like to point out, first of all, is in the rulemaking process, as it has been done in Colorado and in Washington, they have not been able to disallow edibles and concentrates. They have not been able to manage the marketing. And why do we think that this would be any different in the state of Alaska? They are expressly protected in the ballot measure language. When you look at what marijuana means, it is all parts of the plant. It is every compound, manufacture, salt, derivative, mixture, preparation of the plant, its seeds, including marijuana concentrates. Accessories mean any equipment or product, et cetera, in any way to introduce marijuana into the human body. Marijuana products mean concentrated marijuana products, and those include edible products, and those are the ones that are packaged in ways that are made to kids, and I'll show you that in a moment. This is the future of the industry. This is not Woodstock weed. Even the green leafy stuff today is 10 to 15 times more potent than the green leafy stuff that we saw a few decades ago. These are concentrates, 80 to 90% THC, and those would be completely legal in the state of Alaska. They're legal in Colorado and in Washington. Those are made by butane hash oil concentrate, or BHO. They hydrate massive amounts of marijuana with butane fuel, burn it down, add grain alcohol, and then the mixture is cooked, and what's left is the substances that you saw on the prior screen, concentrates that are nearly purely THC. Part of the industry are ways to use the drug surreptitiously. They've seen a doubling in this type of product. It's called a vape pen, and you can put marijuana concentrates in it. And they've seen a doubling of high school students trying these, students that have never before tried a tobacco cigarette but are trying these products. They also make them to look like highlighters, so you can take them into school without detection. So the industry is finding many creative ways to make it easier to use in public and on the fly and in schools. These are the marijuana edibles that the pro side said that we can just, you know, forget about in Alaska. These are the future of the industry. This is a commercial industry. It is highly marketed. It is creatively packaged in ways that seem to be appealing to kids. And as my 9-year-old said, if it's a drug, why does it look like a treat? Hershey's company has an active lawsuit against the company up at the top, see the Kit Kat bar, because it looks surprisingly like their Hershey's product. And this is what is sold in dispensaries and pot shops in Colorado and Washington, and this is what would be sold in Alaska. As the Lieutenant Governor mentioned, any substantive change to the language that is in the ballot measure would be considered a repeal, and the state of Alaska would be open to lawsuit by the very industry that is funding this ballot measure. These are marijuana edible displays in the pot shops in Colorado. Candies, cookies, gummy bears, these are all products that are commercialized and sold in these various shops in Colorado. Advertising. The top right-hand side is a full-page ad in the Denver Post. These are Valpak ads. They have dancing marijuana leaves on the sidewalk in Colorado, kind of like the Liberty Tax guy in downtown Anchorage. Those are all allowed and part of the industry and its effort to bring in new users and get current users to use more. The commercialization, there are now more pot shops in Colorado than there are liquor stores and pharmacies. The bottom left-hand side is a Google map displaying the concentration of marijuana stores in Denver. They showed their sign proudly. We don't think that it's a good message to tell our kids that any of things are safe, much less that marijuana is the safest of these or it is safe. And that is what the industry is trying to tell us, is that this is a safe option for us and for our kids. The science and the research and the data on this is incredibly important for us to pay attention to. The adolescents who start using marijuana by the age of, at the age of 13 and above, 1 in 6 of them will become addicted. There is up to an 8-point drop in IQ if you start using marijuana in adolescence. Your brain is still forming at the age of up to 23 and sometimes 25. And so we do need to look at the science and what it does to memory, emotion, motivation, and some of these, the effects on the brain that are critically important at the developmental stage. In Alaska, we have a tremendous amount of activity in industry, and we can see it here in Nome as well. The workplace concerns are valid, and they are potentially very expensive, not from just a cost standpoint. Our workers' compensation costs are already the highest in the nation. When you add on top of that the fact that we do not have any appropriate standards or reliable testing for marijuana effectiveness, impact or how it affects a person, we don't have a field sobriety test, and roughly 3% of our police force have said that they believe they have the proper training and tools to manage what would be an impaired society. I think we have some grave concerns about what this would do to our state. When you look at workers who test positive for marijuana, they have 55% more industrial accidents, 85% more injuries, and a 75% increase in absenteeism. And this is a study done by the Journal of the American Medical Association. The New England Journal of Medicine did a study about the effects of substances in our society. And what they found was that the legal substances have caused the most harm to our society because they're illegal. And because they're illegal, they're commercial, there's advertising, marketing, there is messaging. They are more prevalent, they are more accessible, they are more available, and that includes availability to our youth. And that's why you see higher rates of use. When you legalize a substance, the perceived risk goes down in our youth, and their use goes up. And I saw their slide, but that is not what science shows. When you legalize a substance, the use goes up. You market, you advertise, you tell people they can get a 2-for-1 package, you know, at the new pot shop downtown, and their behavior changes, particularly in our adolescents. When you follow the money and why this is, why we have this ballot measure on the ballot in November, this is funded almost entirely by an outside organization called the Marijuana Policy Project in Washington, D.C. They're funded by a couple of wealthy businessmen, and we are just part of their national strategy. They identified Alaska as the next step in the legalization effort nationwide. They have sent up a staffer, Mr. Rempert, to Alaska to be a part of this campaign, and they see us as just a pawn in their strategy. And I'm going to read this quote from Rob Campia, the Marijuana Policy Project Executive Director, and this was just in August. While most people don't care about Alaska, everyone seems to agree that we cannot afford to lose a statewide legalization vote just 2 years after the twin victories in Colorado and Washington. We absolutely must win in Alaska, lest reporters declare the legalization movement to be backsliding. This is not about Alaska. This is not about personal freedoms. This is not about anything other than a commercialized effort, an industrialized effort to bring retail marijuana to Alaska. Recent polls have shown an 18-point shift in how Alaskans see this legalization effort. We are a grassroots organization. We only receive funding from Alaskans. We are having personal conversations with Alaskans. We do not have $300,000 to invest in the media campaigns like the Marijuana Policy Project invested in through the campaign in Alaska on the yes side. But we've seen a significant shift in public perception of what's in the ballot measure, and we believe it is because we are having conversations and Alaskans are understanding it does mean edibles and concentrates. It does mean big business. It does mean advertising and a lot of the trends that we saw with big tobacco telling us that this was good for us. So some of the myths. When you look at the revenue for Alaska, Colorado has already seen a drastic disappointment in their tax revenue and what they were told they could expect. They said they could expect roughly $100 million in tax revenue from marijuana when it got up and running. They've seen $13 million in the first 7 months in Colorado this year. Washington, despite having 2 years to oversee their regulatory concerns and to outline the rulemaking process, still doesn't have it figured out. A nine-month rulemaking process in Alaska where we have zero infrastructure around this, where we have zero regulatory authority or bodies around this, it is wishful thinking to think that 9 months would be enough for us to create an entire oversight of an industry. Colorado started legalizing their efforts in 2006 when they decriminalized and when they legalized medical marijuana. Between 2006 to 2011, they saw a 114% increase in traffic fatalities where the driver tested positive for marijuana. We have so much to learn from Colorado, and one of the concerns and one of the things that we are being told is this will solve our budget concerns in Alaska. A state that has a $7 billion budget relying on roughly $5 million of revenue that will not even cover the cost, the hard cost, that our state estimates and our chiefs of police have estimated it will cost them is a losing math equation. Our communities will shoulder the burden of the cost of trying to regulate. How am I doing on time?
You can finish up.
Okay, thank you. I'll be very quick. Our police chief said 75% of them would not have the resources needed to deal with potential impact in their communities. That's money that we could otherwise be spending on positive programs in our communities. The black market is thriving in Colorado and Washington. It is expensive to buy from a pot shop, and it is regulated, and you have to give your driver's license, and there is a lot of oversight around it. And so those that can't afford it are purchasing from pot shops, but it's creating more of a black market demand because it is so much more expensive. And so if it's easy, because it is legal now and it is everywhere, and it is cheaper to buy it from the drug dealer on the corner, you're going to buy it from the drug dealer on the corner, and that is exactly what is happening in Washington, Colorado. In fact, the DEA has seen an uptick, five-fold increase in marijuana export leaving their borders in Colorado. I talked about the polls. We're wasting millions locking up innocent pot smokers. I'd like to read a statement from the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police. We were told, so they said that there are just four inmates in the Alaska Correction System who are in prison for misconduct involving controlled substances in the sixth degree, mixed six, so marijuana. We were told each of these are known to be marijuana-related convictions, but each of these prisoners also had other convictions, sometimes multiple convictions, which would keep them in prison even if their marijuana conviction did not exist. In other words, as they said, there are roughly 3,000 convicted inmates in the Alaska Correction Systems, and in 2014 it appears not one of those is there solely due to simple marijuana possession. So that is, again, a mistruth about what is going on with Alaska's incarceration. There are many serious concerns about this. We as Alaskans should be very concerned about the intent of somebody from outside of Alaska trying to force this ballot measure on us and bring commercial industry to Alaska, and be very concerned about the messaging from an industry that seeks to increase use and to bring in new users. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me now invite people here who would like to testify, and we have a number of people who've indicated they'd like to testify, and there may be others on the line. Before I do that, let me ask again the representatives of the state of Alaska to state their names here just so that people know who we've got. You members of the public, in effect, are legislators at this point, and it's your right and your testimony to come advocate one position or another. Also your right to come forward and ask a question of either the proposers or the people who oppose this legislation or the people who represent the state agencies that will have to implement this legislation, where you may have a question about how it affects the current law. So let me just introduce the people from the state agencies and ask them to indicate who they are so that people would know who to direct their questions to. Could you come over the phone and introduce yourselves again?
Hi, Lieutenant Governor. This is Matt Fonder. I'm the director of the Tax Division, and I have with me Brandon Spanos, my deputy director as well.
Thank you.
Yes, hi, Lieutenant Governor. This is Bob Beasley. I'm the Enforcement Unit Supervisor for the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. I'm also serving as the interim director.
Hello, this is Diane Casto. I am with the Division of Behavioral Health, and I am representing the Department of Health and Social Services.
Hello, Lieutenant Governor. My name is Sherry Daigle. I am representing the Department of Corrections. I'm the Special Assistant to the Commissioner.
This is Michaela Fowler. I am the Special Assistant to the Commissioner for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
Hello, Lieutenant Governor. This is Lorenda Lotko with the Department of Environmental Conservation, Food Safety, and Sanitation Program.
Good afternoon, Lieutenant Governor. This is Major Dennis Casanovas with the Alaska State Troopers.
Thank you, Major. Okay. Thank you all for being here today. And the first person who's asked to testify is Tim Smith. Tim, I'd pull a chair forward and so you can be sitting by the speakerphone here. And you've got 3 minutes. It's 3:44, and I'll give you a fair warning.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have anything really prepared. I have a hard time adding to what Dr. Hinderberger said. I think this really is about freedom. It's marijuana prohibition hasn't been any more successful than alcohol prohibition was during the 30s. And that was a terrible disaster, created problems that we're dealing with today. Did no good that I can see. The Supreme Court found in 1975 that the state doesn't have a legitimate reason for prohibiting marijuana possession. And in the Raven case, it was found that the state doesn't have a legitimate cause for prohibiting marijuana possession. All this new bill would do is legitimize a source. It would provide a legal way for people to get marijuana, and that creates a problem. The fact that you've got to deal with the black market, you've created this underground illegal industry, it creates problems. It creates problems in criminality, and it denies the state revenue. You know, we can argue about how much the state will make from it, but we'll make something. And it could be substantial. The same problem is with occurs with medical marijuana. My sister-in-law nearly died from stomach cancer a few years ago, and I think medical marijuana could have helped her. She couldn't eat. She starved it. She was starving to death, and she wasn't willing to deal with the black market, and so she didn't have a supply. Luckily, she survived anyway, but it was awfully close. I just don't understand why we should deny people like that a legitimate source of something that might help them. It certainly can't hurt them. It's one of the more benign substances you could use. And one thing I haven't heard brought up before that might be worth adding is that marijuana is the drug of choice in the villages, in the rural villages, and it's fairly easy to interdict it on the way out there. There's very a few ways to get to the villages, and so a lot of people are being given criminal records for trafficking in a substance that's fairly benign compared to the alternatives. The alternative is alcohol and things like inhalants, which are much, much worse. And another one of the really big problems we have that this might help with is fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. So it's an epidemic in rural Alaska. Marijuana may substitute for some of the alcohol abuse that leads to that terrible handicap that we're imposing on our children. Alaska, everybody knows Alaska is looking for other revenue sources. I think the estimates for tax revenue from this are incredibly low. I just quickly did the math on your estimate. $5 million a year, that means you would only be selling 5,000 pounds of marijuana per year. That just doesn't seem right to me. I think there's probably, it would probably generate a substantial amount of revenue in sales taxes and other taxes. So that's something to consider too. So I'm in favor of it. I think it's going to be much better than what we have now. I think the well-controlled, well-done scientific studies have really not shown the types of harm that were presented by the vote no people. It seems to be a fairly harmless substance compared to the alternatives. If you look across the street, you've got stores selling all kinds of varieties of alcohol that's used by children, used by teenagers a lot, tobacco. This isn't any worse. It's probably a lot less harmful than those things are. So thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Do you have any questions for either the proponents or opponents or the state agency?
My question is the projections for additional costs, they don't seem to show a net benefit. It seems to me that it's important to look at the cost savings from not having to enforce the laws, the prohibition laws.
Let me first answer that. As I said at the beginning of the hearing, we did not come up with an estimate for revenue. We looked at the Colorado revenue estimate. We looked at the what was going on in Washington State. We had some estimates of marijuana use in the state, but we decided not to, and that's consistent with our other initiatives as well. For example, on the minimum wage issue, if the minimum wage goes up, some state projects, might end up having to pay more, but we did not include that because it was speculative. So it was a decision made with the advice of the Department of Law of what we have there. I will direct your question, though, to the Department of Public Safety and perhaps the Department of Corrections to see if there's any savings that were not in our cost estimate that you think should be aired. From Public Safety, Major Casanovas, do you see any reduction in law enforcement costs? Your department has indicated an expansion of costs, and I'll ask the same question to the Department of Corrections.
Lieutenant Governor, while I do think that there is a possibility that there will be a reduction in cost and effort associated with when troopers and law enforcement officers encounter people that are 21 years of age, that meet the requirements of this initiative, that there won't be law enforcement time dedicated to seizing the property, preparing a report or charging documents, handling the evidence, et cetera. What we're somewhat concerned about is whether there will be an increase in the prevalence or use of it and how that may relate to driving on the highways. So we believe that our troopers and law enforcement officers will have to increase our skills in regards to being able to detect those drivers and to take appropriate enforcement action when necessary.
Thank you. Can I ask the same question to the Department of Corrections?
This is Sherry Diggle for the Department of Corrections. And the cost savings that we have looked at, there will be a reduction in charges. There are currently 11 offenders in the state of Alaska in custody for charges relating to marijuana. The problem is we cannot differentiate between the additional charges that accompany the charge for marijuana. So, for example, a person could be stopped for DUI and have a small amount of marijuana and also be charged with misconduct involving a controlled substance. So it's very difficult to determine for the Department of Corrections what the cost savings will be.
Thank you for your questions, Tim.
Okay.
Christina or Dr. Hindenberger, would you like to add any comment?
I would like to. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm not sure if Kaylee with the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police is on the phone, but what we have seen in a statement from them is that there would be no cost savings because they do not have an effort to, Alaskans are not being targeted for marijuana possessions. We're not bringing into Alaskans' homes to, track down simple possession of marijuana because it is legal in Alaska to possess marijuana in the privacy of your own home. And that would not change. You would not be allowed to use it publicly. That would still be something that you do in your home. The medical marijuana conversation, as well as the decriminalization conversation, is something that we're absolutely willing to have. The wrong way to do this is exactly what's in the ballot measure because it opens up a retail and commercialized industry, which will increase Alaskans' use and will increase the challenges that we have with the substance. And we know we already have a lot of challenges with substances in Alaska. I'm Alaska Native, grew up in a rural village. I know there are challenges. This will not replace anything. It will only add to the burden that we have in our communities, in our larger cities in Alaska.
Thank you. Tim, did you have anything you wanted to add there?
I'm
actually asking Dr.
Oh.
Dr. Tim.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah, I'm just trying to get off speakerphone here. No, I don't have anything to add to the comments by the person who testified. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify? Come forward and introduce yourself.
Hello, Frosty Hughes. I don't have anything prepared, but I did do a little bit of research before coming here today. I read an article it was by the ACLU, came out 2013. In 2010, 81% of the arrests in Alaska that were drug-related were for marijuana possession. We're spending $14.4 million in the administration of the laws regarding marijuana. And my concern is, why is it that we're not – sorry, I'm a little nervous. Why is it that we are spending so much time and money and effort with something that's minuscule – not really a big issue when we have more problems with domestic violence, armed robbery, things of that nature? And also, what about the other industries regarding the plants? I mean, the textile products, food, clothing, fuel. I mean, these are other avenues that can create jobs as well as just not, sorry, as well as the sale of the pot itself.
Well, Frosty, would you like to direct that to any of the people on this panel?
Not particularly. I feel kind of silly, but
no, that's fine. I have to say that just the general answer to your question is that we have a legislative process which you can be involved in. We have the initiative process which you are currently involved in, and we'll take your arguments for the record as your questions as arguments for the record. If you can fill out the rest of it, or just tell us where you're from.
Oh, I'm from Teller, Alaska.
And are you representing yourself?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's.
Lieutenant Governor, can I point out one thing?
Yes, you may.
In the actual body of the ballot measure itself, it states that marijuana does, under the definition of what would be allowed, marijuana does not include fiber produced from the stalks, oil, or cake made from the seeds of the plant. So we actually would not. That would be the only thing not allowed in Alaska is a textile industry or the opportunity to make those products.
Okay, that should be addressed because it's insane the amount of things that we can create. I mean, hempcrete, I don't know if you guys are very familiar with that, but it's hemp, cement, lime, water, and it is strong over a long period of time. By the time it dries out, it will last longer than regular building materials, and it also is very heat efficient.
So let me ask the question. Could you give me that citation again?
Sure. It is on page, it is section, under the definition, section 17.38.900, number 6, halfway through that paragraph, marijuana does not include fiber produced from the stalks, oil, cake made from the seeds of the plant, sterilized seed of the plant, which is the incapable of germination or the weight of any other ingredient combined with marijuana to prepare topical or administrations, food, drink, or other products.
So in your mind, does that mean that there should be no hemp industry, or does that mean that you're not limited to the 1 ounce ownership issue there? And let me ask you that, and also ask Tim that, and see how the ABC board would view that.
Sure. So the way that I the definition of marijuana means all parts of the plant, but it does not include the fiber produced from the stalks, which I believe is what you would need to produce some of these products. So that to me is an elimination of that type of product, and the definition is one of the things that would be a substantive change in the ballot measure, which would constitute a repeal, which would, you know, open us up for legal action by outside organizations. So this is very methodical. This is actually more encompassing and extreme and protective of the industry than the ballot measures in Colorado and Washington. It was crafted after them, but it's more inclusive, and there's got to be some sort of reason to exclude that portion of it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Dr. Hinterberger, do you agree with that analysis?
No. In fact, the that section of the initiative that was referred to, I can see how that's confusing, but the intent there was not to prevent production and use of fiber produced from stalks, oil, cake, but simply to say that that was not subject to the same amount, 1 ounce limitation, and to the same taxation requirement. So the intent is certainly not to prevent those parts of the plants from being used.
Okay. Good. We have you on the record on that, and I'm going to say this. We've got 7 more hearings, and if you want to modify that with any sort of legal analysis on either side, I'd introduce that. And Frosty, I'd thank you for raising that particular question.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify today who's here in Nome at this point? Mr. Hanlon.
I ask you to sign in as you introduce yourself.
So my name's Donald Hanlon. I'm from Nome, Alaska. I currently go to school down at Oregon State University, and our neighbors to the north, Washington, we've seen a lot of problems up there with just the way that they're trying to tax marijuana, and they're actually not getting as much revenue as they anticipated when they kind of sold it to voters. And so that's why I'm kind of not really in favor. I'm a kind of libertarian-leaning Republican, but I still think that the states should be the kind of testing grounds of our democratic system. And Washington and Colorado, I mean, we've had 2 years on the initiative, and there appears to be some problems. And so I think that as a state, we should, first of all, give it a little bit more time. And then I'm not sure who crafted this bill, but I'd like to see a bill crafted by Alaskans and by the state legislature, so some of the unique problems that Alaska has can be addressed by our elected representatives.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for any of the experts online?
I was just the only question I would have is who kind of crafted the bill.
Dr. Hinterberger, would you like to speak to that issue?
Yes, sure. This bill is crafted by a team of people, including myself. Another person was Jeff Mittman, who was director of the Alaska Civil Liberties Union at the time, a number of other Alaskans, as well as substantial input from people who were involved in the Colorado initiative. Regarding one point that was just raised about the tax revenue to be generated, it's important to remember that the goal of this initiative is not to generate tax revenue. If tax revenue is generated, that's well and good, but the main goal of this initiative is to get marijuana out of the hands of the black market and to see that it is properly regulated and sold by legitimate businesses in the state.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hamm. Christina, would you like to
Sure. Thank you, Donald. That was a great statement. One of the things I think that we need to be cautious about talking about taxes, this is one of the sources of information that helped the measure pass in Colorado. It's one of the things that has been pushed from the very beginning by the pro side. And in conjunction talking about the black market disappearing. But as Lieutenant Mark Compte of the Colorado Springs Police Department Vice and Narcotics Unit reported to the AP, that marijuana legalization has done nothing more than enhance the opportunity for the black market. And I can give you a link to that story. And it has not reduced illicit sales on the black market as proponents has predicted or marketed.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here in Nome who'd like to comment or ask questions? And I'll include in that members of the press if you've got any for the experts online. Hearing none, is there anyone online who would like to comment or ask some questions?
Yes.
Could you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, my name is Diego Barriga, and I'm with Viridian Sciences, charmsu.org, a cannabis hemp and awareness responsibility nonprofit, as well as the Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition. I'm located here in Vancouver, Washington.
Okay, Diego, just because we're trying to make sure I've got this for the record, you're in Vancouver, Washington. Is Varegas V-A-R-E-G-A?
V-A-R-R-I-G-A.
Okay, and could you give us your affiliation again?
Sure, I'm with Viridian Sciences. V-I-R-I-D-I-A-N, Sciences, charmsu.org, and Oregon State Schools and Communities Coalition.
Okay. 3 minutes.
I'm sorry?
Go right ahead.
Okay. I'm calling to testify to give you a perspective on because I'm in Vancouver, Washington, let me preface by this, I'm not a medical marijuana user or a recreational user. But given that it's now the law in Washington, I find myself in a very different situation. With Viridian Sciences, it's a software company that is based and powered by SAP for the regulation compliance for the cannabis industry. We started and launched a nonprofit, CharmsU, for the social responsible use of cannabis, because let's face it, we want our kids to be safe, we don't want people to be stupid, and if it's going to be the law, let's all be adults and let's act responsibly. So I'm here to offer that sort of testimony and also offer experiences with being in Washington with it now being legal with the Washington law. Say a retailer that's five businesses down from me, a person goes in to that retail store, they can purchase their full amount for that day, but the current state software system that the state has decided to use doesn't track that purchase for the person. So they can purchase their daily limit, walk across the street or, you know, go to the next place a mile away and purchase full amounts again for that day. And they can do that back and forth the entire day. So there's no verification or regulation or compliance on maximum limits or anything like that. So who's to say that they're not going to go and resell that or distribute it or anything like that, because the state opted for a solution that is in compliance. So I'm here to challenge you to start looking. I mean, if this law passes, I challenge you guys to look into a solution that truly, truly encompasses that goal to keep the public safe and to make sure people are consuming responsibly. So, and that's my challenge for you.
You have a question for any of our experts or agency representatives, sir?
I do not. But I'm assuming that this will be posted with contact information if I do have questions in the future online.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Ms. Wilson.
So thank you, Diego. That was your first name. Thank you so much for the cautionary tale out of Colorado. one of the, excuse me, Washington, pardon me. I will submit this also for the record. It's called the Rocky Mountain High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Report that was done by a third-party organization in Colorado, and it looked at data from 2006 to the present around the marijuana expansion in Colorado. And one of the things that has come out of Colorado, and this is related just to the recreational industry starting in January, 44% of their tax revenue comes from tourists. These are tourists that drive into Colorado, purchase marijuana, and leave. That's in the urban areas. In the rural areas or in the mountain regions, it's 90% tourism revenue. So, again, the tax revenue that we would see in Alaska is nowhere near a comparison to Colorado because we just would not have the ability for people to come and drive into our state borders and leave. Because it is, you know, one of, and this relates to Diego's concern, they only track Colorado citizens. So tourists that come in, their driver's licenses, you know, it's not tracked because they're tourists. They're really tracking license holders. And so this is a concern. And how can you regulate an industry like this when you don't know how much people are purchasing, how much they're consuming, and there are supposed to be regulations on that. And it also speaks to the libertarian, I think, nature of Alaskans. Do we really want the state of Alaska, you know, reporting based upon how much Alaskans purchase at a particular pot shop to be tracked by the state of Alaska and potentially for public record? We don't know what that would look like. So I think our personal privacy would be compromised in that way as well.
And let me just ask the question here. Mr. Braga, you've raised the issue of how this is done in Washington. Can you, Christina, or Tim, can you show us where in the law that it requires the state to keep a record of who buys what? Where in the proposed law?
Well, I guess I will say that this is all part of the big questions that we have. And I think there is a lot to learn, and certainly Colorado and Washington do not have it figured out, and there's so much to learn, and we're only now 8 months in. And this is from Colorado, who had started their experiment in 2006 when they, and 2009 when they decriminalized and then opened up medical marijuana shops in Colorado and had infrastructure in place, and they're still seeing significant concerns. They are trying to change the law in Colorado around edibles and other concerns, and they have very small tax revenue compared to what they were hoping to achieve. And so I think that's another big question, and we just don't know yet, and it's a good reason to wait.
Thank you. Tim, did you see anything in the proposed law that you did that authorizes the state to keep a record of who buys what?
No, there is nothing in our initiative that allows the state to track individual purchases. And by the way, Colorado does not do so either, to the best of my understanding. So I'm sorry, my phone line went dead briefly there while this was going on, so I'm not sure if there was a question that was addressed to me previously.
It was the same question I just asked you.
Okay.
Basically.
Yeah.
And you know, that issue having been brought up by the witness by the person testifying from Vancouver, Washington. His argument was that I guess Washington does have some sort of tracking system, but it doesn't.
Do you mind if I jump in there? I'm sorry.
Yeah, please. Yeah, go ahead.
This is Diego Barriga again. I'm sorry. The law states that you can only purchase a certain amount per day, correct? The system doesn't track, or there's no system in place to track how many purchases that you've done, right? I'm just saying that. If there is a daily limit by law for somebody that somebody can legally purchase in one day, it doesn't matter if you're tracked as a person or your personal information is kept, but just as you go into a bar and somebody is cut off for drinking too much or whatever, there should be some sort of system in place where, oh, your ID was already scanned, you've already purchased that ounce from, you know, the store across the street, you can't purchase anymore for today. Come back tomorrow. Or something to that effect. So And by the way, our software does, as a selling point, we're built off of SAP, and SAP does track that information. But that's further down the line. But thank you.
Okay, so, just again, because I want to make sure I'm concerned here about the mechanics. In the proposed bill, Section 1738.020E says that the following acts shall not be a criminal or civil offense. So transferring 1 ounce or less of marijuana and up to 6 immature marijuana plants to a person who's 21 years of age or older. Is that, Tim, is that per day? Is that per week, per month, per year, per instance where somebody could buy an ounce at one street corner store and then buy an ounce at another street corner store? What's the intent of the law there?
My understanding of the intent of the law is that it is on essentially a per instance, as you phrased it, basis. There's no intent to put any sort of daily limit on purchases, and certainly not the intent to track individual purchases. I don't think that Alaskans would put up with that.
So it's like if I've caught 3 silver salmon, I better have an empty cooler before I catch 3 more.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay. And in the in the law, you also say that possession is 1 ounce.
Right.
But I guess
that's
the question, given the derivatives that have been discussed here, is that 1 ounce of raw plant? If it became butane, hash oil, or any of these derivative products, is it 1 ounce of that? Is 1 ounce of pure THC equivalent to 1 ounce of leafy substances? What's the difference in terms of the 1 ounce?
You know, 1 ounce refers to the leafy substance, and if the legislature or other regulatory agency authorized by the legislature wanted to address that, I think that would be something that would be allowed under the intent of the initiative.
This is Christina. I'd actually like to push back on that. When you define marijuana in here, the marijuana definition includes every compound, mixture, salt, derivative, mixture, or preparation, including marijuana concentrate. So by the very definition, it does mean an ounce of concentrate is protected in the definition under the ballot measure. An ounce of concentrate has a street value of about $3,000.
So what we've heard here is two different answers, and I'm just going to put both parties on notice that you're welcome in future hearings to try to refine those answers. What the pro side has said here is that that's something that they did not object to seeing pursued with legislation. That, of course, is going to be subject to a court that may look at the direct reading of the law that may say it doesn't matter what the intent is. But I say that not to score points one side or the other, but to say there's obviously a difference between pro and con. Is there anyone else online who would like to testify or ask questions?
Hello.
Yes, state your name, please. Yeah.
Hello. Yes, this is Tim Hinderberger. I just lost my connection again and just dialed back.
Okay. Okay, Tim. Tim, I don't know if you heard what I had said before, but your answer on intent was different than Christina's answer on intent and view of the plain reading. I was going to ask Major Casanovas first and then the ABC board, how do you view this law in terms of what is an ounce? Is it an ounce of leafy substance, or is it an ounce of a derivative, or if somebody had an ounce of something that is 6 or 7 times more potent than an ounce of the leafy substance, how do you sort that out?
Well, Lieutenant Governor, this is Major Casanovas. I don't know that I can adequately answer that, minus some refining being done by the regulations and some clarity from the Department of Law. So I will have to defer that to others.
Thank you. From the ABC board, have you looked at that issue?
Yes, I have, Lieutenant Governor. I'm going to take the same stance that that the major has taken on that as well. I'm not at liberty to right now to give an answer on that.
Okay. All right.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
So, and you had mentioned this earlier, that as Alaskans, we are now legislators when we are looking at this ballot measure. And the definition of legislation is that, and regulatory, is you can only regulate up to what a legislation says. You cannot regulate beyond a legislation, correct? And so what is included and what is protected in this ballot measure, including the definition of marijuana to include concentrates, to also include edibles, you cannot regulate beyond what is in the definition. And so I would challenge the pro side of this in that it was protected. The language in here expressly protects these substances and these marijuana products and the definition of marijuana because it is legislation and because you cannot regulate beyond what is included in the legislation.
Okay, thank you. There's kind of another question related to the 1 ounce that I wanted to ask with the agency folks here, and I'll start again with Major Casanovas. Major, if you came to my home and you saw marijuana on my coffee table, how much do you need to see before you consider it to be a violation of law today under the Raven decision?
Well, Lieutenant Governor, I think that if we are just strictly applying state law and you're in the privacy of your home and you're an adult, and let's not complicate it by the fact as to whether or not you have a current medical marijuana issued card, I think that you would be under the law safe to have up to the 4 ounce limit that is somewhat defined in the Raven decision.
Okay, so you see current law for personal possession something like 4 ounces. Dr. Hinterberger, is it your intent to reduce the amount that Alaskans are allowed to be in possession of under the Raven decision with this law?
I'm sorry, is it my intent to be what is the law?
Well, Major Casanovas is just...
Well, let me just say that the initiative says that nothing in it is meant to alter the current interpretation of the Supreme Court's decision.
Okay, so nothing is meant to alter it, yet the law says purchasing, using, displaying, or possessing, using, displaying, purchasing, or transporting marijuana for 1 ounce or less. So your proposal says 1 ounce. Major Casanovas just said that the current state's interpretation of the Raven decision is 4 ounces. And your intent is not to contravene the Raven decision. I'm just trying to understand it.
Right.
I'm not, again, arguing for it.
I think the simplest interpretation that comes to my mind immediately is that 4 ounces is apparently protected in the home, but the initiative talks about sale and transport of 1 ounce.
Well, it also says possession.
Right, possession, but that doesn't necessarily mean in the home. So if the Supreme Court's ruling would supersede that, this would seem to mean that possession and, for instance, en route home from having made a purchase of 1 ounce, but if you have 3 more ounces in the home, you're still safe.
Okay. All right, that is one possible clarification. Thank you. I guess a second question I have, and this is more almost from the constitutional, and if the substance is legal, and again, I'll use myself as an example. If you come to my liquor cabinet, sometimes it's got, you know, some old stuff that only comes out to go into the, you know, the plum pudding at Christmas, and otherwise it may have, you know, I may have a bunch of beer in the cooler or not much beer in the cooler. And it's my general right under this to possess pretty much alcohol as I'd like to own. What is the limit on the amount of pot or the variety of pot that marijuana that you'd be allowed to own under this initiative? And is there any, do you see any constitutional issues there?
Well, again, I would have to defer to the Supreme Court and the state's existing interpretation of the ruling, which, as we just heard, is 4 ounces in the home. I don't know any reason why that would change under this initiative.
Okay.
I guess one question I have is, and that one is something else, but under personal use of marijuana, section 17.38.020, something that concerns me, letter C, transferring 1 ounce or less of marijuana and up to 6 immature marijuana plants to a person who is 21 years of age or older without remuneration, and that means without any money exchanging. So, you know, what exactly does that protect, and what does that mean under the definition of personal use of marijuana, because that is not part of a commercial industry or a retail store, which is what this ballot measure is intended to bring to Alaska. You know, what does that mean?
Tim, would you like to address that?
Sure, yeah. I mean, just real straightforward, just like it sounds. It means, like, for instance, you could give an ounce to a friend.
You could give a...
an ounce of
not
marijuana.
Not a violation of law.
Or 6 plants.
To give an ounce or to give 6 plants to a friend without being paid for it. In other words, you're not, in essence, selling marijuana if you're giving a small amount away to a friend.
Correct.
Okay. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify?
This is Kaylee Claysmat with the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police.
Kaylee, could you spell your last name or your first and last name for me?
Certainly. The first name is K-A-L-I-E, and the last name is K-L-A-Y, S as in Sam, M as in Mike, A-T.
And where do you live?
I am in Soldotna.
Thank you. You're welcome to go ahead and testify.
Thank you. On behalf of the Chiefs, I would just like to express that we are very concerned about this ballot measure, and we feel that it is premature, for one thing. The data that is coming out of Colorado and even the beginning data coming out of Washington tells a frightening story. Our fellow Chiefs Association in Colorado is having a great deal of buyer's remorse as they are seeing the statistics changing in that state. And we are concerned about such things happening here. We are also concerned at the cost that we think this will be to just the municipal taxpayers in order to provide the education that our law enforcement officers are going to need to properly handle the issues that are going to arise doing traffic stops with more impaired drivers on the road.
Thank you. Do you have any questions that you'd like to ask of agency officials or of the sponsors or opponents?
Not at this time.
If I could take one of your comments and direct that question perhaps to Major Casanovas again, and sorry to Major to keep putting you on the spot, but how does the Department of Public Safety help train local police now if, for example, this law were to take effect and you were to try to implement a standard or a process for traffic stops, for example, that's consistent across the state? Do you bring everybody back to police academy? Do you offer training? Do you leave that up to every community to consult against a set of standard? How do you do that? And we were not charged under the law with looking at the cost to municipalities here, so that's not included in the cost estimate, I would just say, on the public record.
Lieutenant Governor, I believe that the most comprehensive answer to that is that we would look towards some national standards of programs for the training. We would hope that within the Department of Public Safety, the Alaska Police Standards Council would be willing to also look at that and perhaps help agencies in Alaska in defining what those programs should look like for training. There currently are a couple of levels of training that are accepted and that Alaskan law enforcement officers have attended. One is an impaired roadside driving sort of recognition course. It's fairly short in duration. It's a couple of days of classroom. And then there's a much more intense drug recognition expert training, which is a more robust, 2-week-long training that also requires a lot of practical examinations on drivers who have been apprehended under the influence of drugs. That is a fairly comprehensive and expensive training opportunity that we pay for troopers to go to. And as to whether we could bring these schools to Alaska and whether or not the Police Standards Council could assist in funding and putting those on is unknown.
You say unknown because of costs or unknown because of availability?
Twofold. One is I don't know exactly what that cost would be to bring experts to Alaska to do this. One of the reasons that we have sent troopers out of state to do this is we send them to very urban locations. So after they've had their 2 weeks of drug recognition expert training, they then have to do anywhere between 12 and 24 examinations of actual arrested under the influence of drug drivers. And to try to accommodate that sort of demand in Anchorage, in Fairbanks, in Juneau would be very, very difficult to find that many drivers on a given weekend to do that. So we find it easier to send our troopers out of state to do those in large urban environments.
Fascinating.
If I may add something?
Yes, please go ahead, Kaylee.
The chiefs have done some research on this because while the urban areas, you know, this is an important thing and a sizable cost, we were looking at all of our agencies, and in rural Alaska, it is even harder. When you have a small agency of three or four officers, when you are a $1,000 plane ticket from Anchorage, in order to cover overtime, to, you know, either bring an instructor in or to send people out, it's really, really difficult. We estimate that about 700, we think around 700 law enforcement officers in the state need basic roadside impairment training. It's called an A-RIDE training is the class name. And then we're looking at about 150 of them that we think need the extended training. And that would be so that there would be a drug recognition expert available on every shift in a community or in an area. And as we look at those, and we've added the costs up considering the travel, the overtime, and all of that sort of thing, we are looking at nearly $4 million just for training to what would be considered a basic standard. And most of that is because of the excessive distance that, you know, we're having to look at.
Thank you very much. I've got two. Is there anyone else who would like to testify?
Hello, this is Tim Hindenburg again. I wonder if I could just respond to Kaylee's last comment there.
Sure.
The assumption that I'm hearing here is that marijuana abuse rates, impaired driving rates, are going to skyrocket in Alaska if this initiative passes. And I'd like to remind everyone that there's really no reason to assume that is going to happen. Alaska already has one of the highest use rates of marijuana. So I assume that our police are already trained to recognize and deal with impaired drivers. And if they're not, I'm surprised to hear it.
Okay.
That's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Christina Wilson?
Yeah, so they're looking at Colorado. As I mentioned before, they began their experiment with legalization of marijuana in 2006 and again in 2009 as they allowed for dispensaries for medical marijuana. And what they saw between the years 2006 to 2011 was a 114% increase in traffic fatalities where the driver tested positive for marijuana. In addition, in that same study, they looked at pre- and post-medical marijuana commercialization of average operators testing positive for marijuana, and just that alone, there was a 64% increase. And so I think that when you legalize a substance, as the New England Journal of Medicine has shown, the use goes up, and therefore we can reasonably summarize that the use of operators, whether that be a commercial or a personal vehicle, will go up as well, as they've seen in Colorado.
If I could just respond to that again real quickly.
Yes, please go ahead.
Those percentage increases sound large, but in fact that refers to a relatively modest increase of the number of people who we're talking about who are tested as driving impaired. But, yeah, let's move on.
Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Hearing none, I'm going to put two questions on the table for sponsors, opponents, and state agencies, just that were kind of brought up by the hearing today, because I think it's important to have mechanics on the record. We've had no discussion today on the local control issue, and I'm going to ask Bob Easley at the ABC board to explain how does local control work today with alcohol, and how would you see it working with marijuana under this legislation that's here now?
Well, thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Currently, the alcohol that's being shipped out to the local option communities that allow it, the damp communities, those purchases are required to go through the written order database that we maintain. And that database, Lieutenant Governor, was designed to prevent, basically to prevent bootlegging. And what was happening was people were liquor store shopping. You still had a limit on the amount of alcohol that you could order within a month. And because package stores, of course, don't share their customer information with each other, you would have an individual that would order their maximum monthly amount from one package store and then a day or two later do the same thing from another one. And our written order database will track the customer, and those package stores that are authorized to input the data and sales into the written order database, it's shared amongst all of them, although they don't know who the customers are for each individual package store, but it's customer-based. It comes off of your driver's license number. It's entered in, and it's tracked for all of the package stores that are doing this. And by statute, that written order database is required to be purged within 1 year. And right now, the way the program is set up, and it is actually pretty ingenious, that for each individual customer, on a daily basis, it's purged every 364 days. So there isn't a whole year worth of data in the database for a customer. It's actually purged every year for the year every day. One of the individuals that testified, the gentleman that was from Vancouver, about the program they have, that sounds like it's similar to what we do right now for the local option communities. So
that answers. To step up to a higher level to begin with, right now we have communities which can have full liquor dispensaries. Probably I could throw a baseball here and hit about five from where I'm sitting in Nome. We have communities where you cannot have dispensaries, but you can possess, in which case you call that damp, and people can order to be shipped through a warehouse or however the municipality sets it out. And then you've got a third kind of municipality or community that decides that they will have no alcohol possession allowed whatsoever. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that's correct. That's a dry community.
Okay. So under this proposed legislation, would you have three tiers or two tiers or just one tier? You can sell or you can't sell, but all can possess.
From what I understand, Lieutenant Governor, it sounds like that possession would not be banned, but the sale would. So the community could vote and decide whether or not they wanted to have marijuana sales distribution centers in the community or not.
So a village that had decided for sobriety purposes to have a ban on alcohol could not have a ban on marijuana. I believe that was testified to by Dr. Hinderberger before. And in that case, the Raven decision applies even today, I guess. Is that correct? Well, you can't transport it legally, but however you get it. It's
right. Yeah, correct. To my understanding, that is correct.
Okay. So in terms of local control, if a community decided they did not, could a community allow manufacture but not sale except on a wholesale basis? This seems to happen with medical marijuana in California. How would that work?
I think it would, you know, it all be drafted in the legislation, you know, in the statutes and regulations that come if this were to pass.
Okay. Dr. Hinderberger, do you have any comment on that?
No, I guess I would have to agree that it's conceivable that a municipality or the local government could, for instance, prohibit the production but allow the sale, or prohibit the sale but allow the production. Was that the question? I'm not sure.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but in no case could a community regulate its possession. Is that correct?
That's right. I mean, that's everyone's understanding of the Raven decision. And let me just remind everybody that in that decision, the Supreme Court explicitly said that they were allowing dry communities, but they were not allowing the prohibition of possession of marijuana anywhere in the state, expressly because they saw that alcohol was a much more dangerous substance than marijuana.
Thanks. If you'd like to provide that citation for the record, we'd accept that.
Okay. I don't have that handy.
Sure. Likewise, I'll be happy to provide my counter to that as well, the extreme harm that can come from this. In the definition of lawful operation of marijuana-related facilities, I'm sorry, let me go back to here. Under personal use of marijuana, it allows for the possessing, growing, processing, or transporting. So you can process in your own home in rural communities. So things like butane hash oil, you could process in your own home legally in Alaska. So it does not prohibit any of that.
So you could process it and you could give it away, but you couldn't sell it.
I'm nodding my head. Sorry, yes.
Okay. All right. So the reason why I raise this question is because I've heard both proponents and opponents talk about local option or local control as either being allowing or being not allowing, and we may tease this out further, but that's obviously going to be an issue that the ABC board would deal with extensively if the bill passes. Would you consider it vitiation of the law if the legislature wanted to allow prohibition of possession, Dr. Hinderberger?
If the legislature wanted to prohibit possession,
yes,
that would be unconstitutional under the current Supreme Court ruling.
Under governing law. Okay. Thank you. I guess the next question that was occasioned by testimony just had to do with the presentation early on about advertising, where I believe I heard the comment that advertising would be banned and that you would prevent the sale of gummy bears, lollipops, that sort of thing. Do you read any permissiveness in the rulemaking provisions of Section 17.38090, or do you see that as just the capability to ban it and a decision to be made later? Would advertising be allowed or just tightly regulated?
Advertising would be tightly regulated, and it remains up to the legislature and to regulatory agencies to determine how tight that is. I don't think there's anything in the initiative that would prevent, for instance, prohibition of any form that was, say, colored and sweetened, or a limitation on the THC concentration of any product.
So they could prevent sodas or some product because it's something that would be attractive to children? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's my understanding. And that's certainly our intent.
Okay, and your legal law to allow that says requirements to prevent the sale or diversion of marijuana and marijuana products to persons under age of 21. So, in other words, if it looks like a kid's product, it could be outlawed under your law.
I think it should be. Yes.
Okay. So is a brownie a kid's product?
It could potentially be. For instance, as I said, I think the rulemaking could include any, say, sweetened form of it.
Okay. And then as far as advertising, you say the law proposed says reasonable restrictions, and you made the statement advertising could be banned. How does banning something amount to a reasonable restriction? Again, I'm trying to tease out the mechanics here. I'm not trying to argue one side or the other. I'm just this is where intent goes on the record.
Yeah. Well, as you've heard from our presentation, the sponsors of the initiative would be comfortable with quite sweeping bans on advertising. Now, I suppose that once the initiative passes and the private sector manufacturers, retailers get involved, they could try to test any such rulemaking in court. And, of course, then it would be up to the courts to interpret this.
Thank you. Christina, do you have a comment there?
I do, and it really goes back to the experience in Colorado. This ballot measure was crafted after Colorado's. The Marijuana Policy Project, as part of their national strategy, has had a hand and is funding this almost 100%. And it is for the intent of a commercial industry. And a commercial industry and their lawyers and lobbyists will not stand for a substantive change in this ballot measure, which expressly protects edibles, concentrates, and every single product that is included of a derivative or a form of marijuana, which is protected under this ballot measure, to be changed under regulation. It is a piece of legislation. And because it is included in there and expressly stated, it is protected, and any substantive change is a repeal, and the state of Alaska would be open to lawsuits by outside interests. And in Colorado, they have considerable buyer's remorse around edibles and concentrates, and they have not been able to change that. And so I don't see why we – and advertising as well is the nature of a retail industry. And they have advertising everywhere. In fact, there was just an advertising package bought for NFL games in Seattle. So I think that we should be very concerned that what is included in here and protected could not be changed afterward without significant legal costs to the state of Alaska.
Thank you. I guess my last question is for Diane Casto at Department of Health and Human Services. It has to do with the question of medical marijuana. Can you explain the current law on medical marijuana and how that would be affected by this law?
Certainly, Lieutenant Governor. This is Diane Casto. I'm with Department of Health and Social Services. As has been pointed out by both sides, I believe, we currently have a medical marijuana law on the books, and it does allow people to get a diagnosis from a doctor to bring in, to have a prescription allowing them to use medical marijuana. They can go to the state of Alaska, get a card that indicates that they can possess marijuana for this purpose. What we do not have, and what has been pointed out, is a mechanism for obtaining marijuana once you get that card. And that is certainly an issue that the department is looking at and has been looking to make some changes. We have no recommendations at this time. We are looking and doing some investigation in how other states are dealing with this, and that is something that, regardless of which way the initiative goes, the department will be looking at its medical marijuana laws and determining if there's a need for change, what kind of change that would look like, and how we might bring that to bear. You know, many states have, I don't remember exact number of how many states have medical marijuana, but a lot of them do, and it's handled differently in many states. I work with a number of national organizations, and we're trying to kind of figure out, you know, what is the best way, what is the right approach, and how can we have some consistency in this over time.
And so I've had some discussion with members of the Board of Pharmacy in the past on this issue because a constituents have asked to see the Board of Pharmacy allow its sale or somehow schedule it. is that where, do you have the power now to authorize pharmacies to sell marijuana?
That is not in our power at this time. So that is something that we would have to work with the Board of Pharmacy. You know, I think some of the issues that all obviously keep coming forward for many organizations and many entities is the divide between federal law and state law. So, you know, again, that's an issue that needs to be discussed among others, but it's certainly something that's on the radar and will be looked at over the next year or so. But
okay.
Right now, no, they cannot prescribe it. I mean, they cannot sell it through pharmacies.
Okay, and then just kind of thinking about a drug, if I'm told to, you know, by my doctor to, you know, take a prescription or something, there's general requirements on purity of the drug, you know, that sort of thing. And I maybe the question to ask both DEC that oversees purity of consumptibles produced in the state, yourselves who regulate pharmaceuticals and the sponsors and the opponents of the bill, how would a medical marijuana person with a medical marijuana card encounter this bill? Would they be allowed to hold more than 1 ounce under the law? Would they be would there be some sort of regulation of purity perceived under this? What is the approach to medical marijuana once this legislation passes?
This is Diane Casto again, and I'll let me start that conversation because when we were initially, all the departments got together and had a few meetings to work out some of the costs and things that we were talking about and looking at, and this issue did come up a number of times as to how do we manage that, how do we, you know, what are the regulations, and there was some debate among some of the conversations about should this you know, if we have retail marijuana, do we need medical marijuana laws? And I believe very strongly that there is still a need for medical marijuana. Medical marijuana can be a very different product than regular marijuana. Some individuals who use medical marijuana for pain, but do not want the mind-altering impact, they just want the pain relief, then there are different, as you say, different ways to compose the marijuana, different levels of THC and other compounds in the marijuana. So all of that would have to be part of the regulations as we move forward in making those determinations, because it's not clear in as far as I read the initiative what the determinations would be or should be related to medical marijuana.
Thank you. Is there anybody else on line, DEC or the opponents who'd like to elaborate on that?
This is Tim Inver. I just want to say that the initiative expressly states that nothing in it should be interpreted as altering the current statutes regarding medical marijuana.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so in your case, Tim, what you're saying is that this would not make medical, you know, while you could still have a card that allows its possession, it would not make medical marijuana available, per se.
Well, it would make marijuana available, and if it was a medical card holder who wished to purchase 1 ounce under the rules of the initiative, that could certainly occur. But, again, it was simply just to clarify that nothing in the initiative is intended to alter the medical marijuana law.
Okay. And then there was some, Lorinda, who was about to speak?
Yes, and I just wanted to clarify that DEC, we regulate food. We don't regulate drugs. And that really hasn't been determined yet, whether it would be considered a food or a drug.
Or both,
correct. So that would be difficult. And, I mean, I think more research would have to be completed for that and our involvement.
Okay. Great. Thank you. We've had a few more people come into the room, and before I close the hearing, let me just ask if there's anyone else who'd like to testify or anybody who'd like to put questions forward. Seeing and hearing none, it's about 4:51. I want to thank everybody who's been involved today. This is the first of what will be 8 hearings on this matter. Our next one will be held in Barrow on Friday, and which will be 12 to 2 at the Inupiat Heritage Center. If you would like to join us online, you can do so by dialing 855-463-5009. I want to thank the proponents and the opponents for traveling with us and putting up with these questions. And anybody who's worked on substantive legislation knows that lots of questions come up. You get them on the record. Sometimes that record is very helpful, you know, when later interpretation comes down, and that's why we're going through the process that we are now. And then, of course, citizens are very, very welcome to advocate for or against the legislation for any particular reason. Thank you so much for being part of this, and Godspeed in the rest of your day, and travel safely home for those of you who are flying. Thank you.
Thank you.
Or my book.